Sometimes I forget
who you are.
Right. What? Where am I? Today is November 7th.
Yep.
The month before the day that will live in infamy.
Also, Election Day.
Election Day, yes. Yes.
I voted this morning.
That is a good thing.
And I have a story about the voting when you're done with the intro.
Oh, do you?
Yep.
All right. The intro. This is the intro. A long time ago.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time. It's 289. It's on taking pictures. It's Tuesday. Just what was I supposed to say? Just a couple of dick bags talking about photography. Is that a thing? That's our new tagline. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. So it is 289 for those of you keeping track. Close. We're wooing 300. We're romancing our way to 300.
I like it. It's exciting.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so welcome, kids. What do you got about voting? You got a story. Bill teased us.
So I woke up this morning,
mm-hmm.
and I wrote down this song.
Which is weird because we were just talking about James Taylor before the show in like the little pre-show.
We were.
Yeah. So
Woman's Gotta Have It. It's a good song.
Yeah.
Good bass plan.
Yeah.
So the place that I vote is a library about three blocks down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it also happens to be the voting place of our good mayor, Bill de Blasio, because Bill de Blasio's house is around the corner from my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You ever see him mowing his lawn? House.
Well, it's a little tiny house and there's no lawn because it's Brooklyn. But
so that's
yeah,
a no.
I see him all the time. So even though he lives in Gracie Mansion now, he still hangs out in our neighborhood. He goes to my gym. I see him all the time. Like, he's around all the time.
Yeah.
And so Conrad and I get up and we go over there to go vote because it is a mayoral election. He's running.
Sure.
And, there's also this big thing in New York State where every, I think 20 years, they put on the ballot the question of whether or not they want to reopen basically have a constitutional convention for the state to allow changes to the constitution every 20 years.
And this is the 20th year. This is.
Yeah. So there's a ballot measure asking whether or not they should have a constitutional convention. So mm-hmm. there's like lots of for and against, blah blah blah. But anyway, so it's like a off year, but an important year in New York State. So we go over there, and there's like a bunch of people outside, and I'm like, oh man, so there's like a line, man. We got up too late because usually on like the presidential election years, we go.
I have to wait to vote.
Well, no. So we usually go first thing so we don't have to. Well, it was like a line outside. I'm like, man, this is going to take a while. So we get up there and it turns out it wasn't a line. It was like some protesters for whatever it is. And then a bunch of security people. And then the sort of Secret Service-y looking guys that I recognize because I see them all the time at the gym and stuff.
Wait, you see this? Like, okay. They're not working out. They're watching over the mayor.
They're standing around in their little suits with the thing in their ears, right?
Right.
So, I go inside. I was like, oh, is the mayor here yet? And they're just like, oh, no, he's heading over. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay. So you go downstairs because there's press outside, right? You know, TV stations and whatever. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Go downstairs, go into like the little downstairs room that, I don't know, let's say it's probably the size of like 18 by 36. You know what I mean? Not a huge room, but like, you know, a room.
Sure.
On one short wall, there's a stage because it's sort of the kind of place you can give presentations and that kind of stuff. The entire stage, Jeffrey, is filled with press. 15 TV cameras, 30 guys with cameras. You know what I mean? Like this kind
just
of, you know,
waiting
like
just, for the mayor to arrive?
Waiting for the mayor to arrive so they could shoot him essentially voting. You know, get that shot of him.
Okay.
The thing is, all over the room are signs that have camera with a big slash through it.
Right.
I'm like, wait a minute. How come these guys get to come into what is technically, you know, you know what I'm saying? The whole point of not having cameras is so you can't take pictures of other people while they're voting.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
But these guys can. Like, I was just like, I understand them being outside, but I have a problem with them being inside the room. You know what I mean? I just thought that was a little weird. And of course, not only are they there, but then everyone who's working there is pulling out their phone and taking pictures right next to the sign that says no photography.
Right.
You know, I think we have this weird thing nowadays. I think for a long time, no one carried a camera around. You know what I mean? Like, you know, back in the day.
Right. Sure. They're not as ubiquitous. They weren't as ubiquitous as they are now. Sure.
Yeah. And now they're everywhere. And so now everyone's always trying to control. Oh, you can't take a picture in front of this building. You can't take a picture in this building. Well, you can, but you can't. And you can't use that for commercial purposes. Well, you can. The facade of this building is trademarked. So you can't use it. And, you know, all this
I've had that happen in New York. Right. I mean, in LA, rather.
So you have all of this stuff where everyone's trying to contain photography, but then everyone just flouts these containments of photography to the point where it just becomes this big power trip, right? Of like who's allowed to use the power of photography and who's not. And I just, it's beginning to be a little bit of like a free speech thing to me where it's just like, look, like,
do you find that you're more sensitive to it lately? Or have you?
Noticing it more.
You're
lately.
Noticing it more. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I was standing there and I was in the shower and I get out of the shower and, you know, Conrad's getting dressed and I was just like, you know what? I think I have a problem with all those people being in the actual election room today.
Right.
Like who said that was okay? I'm not allowed to take camera in there. Why is the press, you know, like take his picture outside, interview him outside. Like it was like this weird.
So who would you talk to find out why
it was allowed
and who gave the okay for it?
God, you know, I don't know.
Is there an election commissioner that you would talk to?
Or? I could imagine a reporter in there saying, you know, how does it feel today, Mr. Mayor? You know, like, you know, one of those sort of, you know, it feels good, you know, one of those kinds of things.
Feeling strong.
Yeah. I think we got this one in the bag, you know?
Right.
I don't know if the election commission, you know, I mean, I understand that it's newsworthy.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like there are other people also voting in this room. And the point of not having photography is that those people don't feel like they're being pressured, right? You know what I mean? There's a certain element of, oh, look, Jeffrey's voting right now. I wonder what Jeffrey's voting like. You know what I mean? That's the whole point is I don't know.
It's suspense, weird. Right? It's this mock sense of drama.
Yeah. Yeah. And, or, you know, intimidation in certain places, I'm sure, you know, like, oh, Jeffrey's coming in to vote.
Wait a
I bet
minute.
You he's voting for that. For
voters
that.
Don't get intimidated in this country, Bill. Come on.
Yeah. Come on.
Come on. There's nothing wrong with our system.
Not in my adorable town.
No way.
So, I don't know. I don't know where I come down on it, but I just thought it was worth mentioning. And if anybody has any thoughts on the matter, I mean, I'm sure there are legal things, but I don't, it's in the same way that I don't understand civil forfeiture. You know, that whole thing where the cops like just take property and you don't get it back. Yeah. And you're like,
your house committed this crime. We are taking your house.
Yeah. That stuff where I'm just like, that is insane.
Yeah.
It's like absolutely insane.
If your
like,
house has a problem with it, let your house file a motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so Orwellian.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just weird. Creepy.
It's
so
weird.
In the same way like that, I'm sure it's legal what they did. I just don't feel like it's right. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
you know what? There seems to be a lot of that sentiment, you know?
Yeah.
In the country right now that might, like, we don't really know. It might be legal, but even if it is, it doesn't feel like it's right.
Well, I mean, that's the big thing in with a lot of legal stuff that involves photography, where there's misunderstandings about what is legal and where it's legal and how
what
it's
you
legal.
Can, you know, where you can. Yeah.
You're not allowed to take pictures in the subway. Yes, you are allowed to take pictures in the subway.
Yeah, you're not allowed to photograph that, police officers. Yes, you are allowed to photograph police officers.
Yeah, but if the police officer says you're not allowed to take pictures of me, what are you going to get in a fight with a police officer? And then you're obstruction of justice and then you get arrested. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost a little bit like, even if you're right, you can't win.
Yeah, a little bit of that. It feels like it sometimes.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I just it bothers me, and there's a lot of miscommunication and misunderstanding, and I don't know. That's just one of those things that I've been thinking about lately. Anyway, what do we got? We got a ton of stuff on the list.
Let me ask you something, Bill.
Yep.
If you could recreate an iconic photograph,
which one would it be?
What would it be?
That's a good question. I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. I should start recreating photographs. Would the Halsman be on your list?
No, actually it wouldn't.
What did you have one in mind?
No, but I wouldn't mind doing a play on Avedon's American West pictures. I really like those pictures.
Yeah, those are definitely one of those sets of images. You know, I had a conversation the other day with somebody about the American West pictures. Actually, I think it was Kent, and I were talking about them. And just saying that, you know, we've seen the whatever 30 or whatever of them that actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure, as I recall, that he shot 150 of them.
Right.
You know what I mean? That, like, we're seeing a very small subset, and a lot of them were probably pretty boring.
Yeah.
You know? And so let's take the ones with the rattlesnake. Yeah,
we're
and the
seeing
bees
the greatest
and the
hits.
Whatever. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, we're totally seeing, one we're of those. Seeing a curated representation of that. Sure. I mean, with right, anything, right?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I think specifically that set is not like all of them were interesting. And he had casting directors out there looking for him and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, those are totally doable, right? Yeah, I mean, just get a white thing and a shade.
Or was it Penn that did that terrific portrait of Truman Capote? Was that a Penn picture?
Sure, with the glasses.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's a Penn picture.
Love that. Reason we're asking this, friend of the show, Carl Taylor, who funny enough, I was just having a little Skype back and forth with, he recently recreated the famous Philippe Halsman shot of Dolly. It's called Dolly Atomicus, and you've probably seen it. It's the one where Dolly's in the air and there are three cats in the air and there's water, and this was all captured in camera, right? This was no Photoshop. Well, it's before anybody even thought of Photoshop, really, but it was all in camera. So Carl and his folks I don't know how it came about. If they decided they wanted to do it, or the BBC One for their artist series said, "Hey, recreate this one." I don't remember. I have to ask him. But anyway, so they spent weeks building the set and researching and you know, Carl used like ray tracing to figure out where the lights were coming from, and then they used monofilament to hang all the props in space in the right, you know, position. And I thought it was great fun. I thought they did a terrific job.
They did do a good job. In fact, yeah, their final version is really good. You know what it comes down to too is the original, if you look at it. Actually, well, the original, these versions of the original are not, but the top one is.
Yeah.
That is not actually that high contrast.
You know
what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
It's contrasty, but the blacks aren't inky black.
No. They're
sort
kind
of dark gray.
A muddy gray. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool.
They did a good job. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Funny enough, it took Halsman 28 tries to get this picture. It took Carl's team 29 tries to get their version of it. On the 29th one, they got one that Carl thought pretty well nailed it. And I think they did a great job.
They did do a good job. The interesting thing, though, is that, like, they knew what they were going for. Halsman, if you notice, like, Dali jumps in very different ways in each one, right? He's just kind of, he's messing around a little bit.
Yes.
Where Carl's just like, no, I know what I need to get. You need to jump like this.
Yeah.
So
take a look at it. There's a whole behind the scenes. Put a link in the show notes. There's a whole behind the scenes of how they did it.
He's shooting with his Hasselblad, right?
He's shooting with his Hasselblad, I believe. Right. Yeah. But they got a you know, local actor to stand in as
yep. That guy was pretty great.
Yeah, he was really good as Dali, and they built the set in their studio. And I like this kind of thing. I like the idea of doing, you know, a different take or an homage, whatever you want to call it, of some sort of picture that really does it for you. I think it's kind of fun.
So I mean, this one is
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say this one is definitely like not even an homage, but just sort of like, let's try to actually.
Yeah, let's try
this,
that one. Know? So if you guys podcasted on taking pictures, what photograph would you like to recreate? Look, they spent weeks doing this and a lot of resources, and they built a set and that kind of thing. All of that notwithstanding, what would you guys like to try and recreate?
Yeah.
Wait, what's our phone number?
347-687-9400. 9411?
9411, yeah. So either leave an email or leave a voicemail, 347-687-9411, as Bill said. What would you like to recreate? Or recreated one? If you have, let us know, and we'll talk about it on the show, or we'll link to it in the group. You know, show us what you've done.
Wasn't it Rankin who did the video, remember, where he was recreating the different shots?
I think it was, yeah.
The fashion thing?
Rankin, recreate iconic shots. I think it was Rankin.
Yeah, we'll find that and put a link in the show notes. We talked about it a long time ago.
Yeah.
If you've listened to the show for that long, you probably remember.
Yeah, I think it is. Watches Rankin recreates one of David Bailey's iconic scenes. Yeah, I think it was.
All right. Give me a link to put in the show notes. Okay. New versions of some software out for those of you around. Have you tried the new versions of Affinity Designer and Photo, Jeffrey?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, look, I used Affinity Photo and Affinity Designer throughout the production of the book. So when they, you know, I've been using the betas of 1.6 for a while. And now they've solidified the code base and released them.
Some performance increases.
They're still a little slower to process raw files, and that's something we've talked about before.
Right.
Opening raw files are still a little slow. But they've got apparently better PSD back and forth.
I'm interested to see, to the point where they can control, keeping adjustments, effects, and layers intact. Interesting.
Right.
But if you, can it go in two directions? Can you create adjustment layers that are Photoshop compatible within this?
That I have not tried yet. But their selection tools are really good. And they talk about some of this stuff on their page. I'm probably not a great use case because in the way I have been with Photoshop, I don't use a ton of features. I use the features that I use, and I've used, you know, a similar workflow for quite a long time when it comes to processing photos and manipulating and that kind of thing. So I'm probably not, the best person to always be on the cutting edge of what the latest features are, because a lot of those features don't apply to me.
It's interesting, man, that in one of the pictures on here, halfway down, there's the breathtaking compositions thing, and they're using a Microsoft Surface.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting that they're pushing the Windows compatibility that hard.
Yeah. Yeah, the two big things that seem to have happened over the past year are kind of at different ends of the spectrum with them, and one is the Windows compatibility, but the other is Affinity on iPad. So it's very strange that to me anyway, that those two ends of the spectrum are really what they've been promoting the most internally and externally, for that matter.
Yeah. I'm going to have to download the new one and give it a shot. What do they charge now? $50?
49. Yeah, they had a special going for a bit.
Which, man, if you just need something for yourself, don't need to transfer files around, don't necessarily know Photoshop that well already. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of coming in with like a clean slate with no baggage that I have to carry.
Right.
Totally check that out. It's good.
But even so, I mean, you're not letting people alter your photographs. You're not delivering layered PSDs to your clients by and large, are you?
Not by and large, but it does happen, and I do pass them between myself and some like a retoucher that I've been using a little bit lately. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily a deal breaker, but something that it's like one of those things where, unfortunately, it's not like one of those things where it's unbelievable that Photoshop is the standard, but Photoshop is the standard.
Yep.
And it's still excellent software. So it's just sort of comes down to, are there other softwares that are as good and cheaper, or, you purchase instead of, subscribe to, and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
Also this week, Luminar, the new version of Luminar came out.
Right. MacFun changing their name.
Yeah, why are they changing their name? Skylum? Well,
because they're not a Mac-centric company anymore. Ah,
they should be, you know, computer lum fun.
Right. Or they could just change their name to Love, like Diddy did.
Brother Love, man.
Brother Love.
The one thing I will say, so apparently the new version of Luminar, which is the sort of raw conversion software that Mac Fun, soon to be Skylum, has been making.
Right.
Is that apparently in 2018, they're going to be, in the next year, they're going to be adding a lot of features. Do they actually have the organization features, or is that
not
coming
yet? That's coming.
Soon?
But you can pre-order now for like $59. You can pre-order the new version.
Ah,
so okay. You get $10 off and you get a bunch of other things with it.
Yeah. So theoretically, they're going to have sort of a cataloging element, a digital asset management built into Luminar.
Yep.
They'll be releasing a free update that'll support, I guess, Lightroom catalogs. I wonder if that's importing or if that's back and forth. Like you can open up your Lightroom catalog in here, work on it, open it back up in the other one. You know, workflow is such a tricky thing because you ultimately... it makes the most sense and it's the best thing to do to organize your stuff in a certain way and kind of come up with a way you work. And then things don't get confused. Things don't get lost. You name things a certain way. You work on them this way. But now there's so many different ways that you can do it that is starting to get complicated, you know, just different things to choose. Yeah. Special price, $60 upgrade to the current Luminars for $40. Pretty cool.
Yeah. It's pretty neat, right?
Yeah, I played with it a little bit, Luminar, the current version of Luminar, and it was like, you know, it wasn't really for me, but, you know, what's his name swears by it. Who's the guy?
Scott Bourne?
Scott Bourne.
Yeah.
Scott Bourne swears by it.
Well, look, if they can nail, even if there aren't any significant features over Lightroom, but they can nail the performance that Lightroom lacks, I think they will convert a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Lately, I found that, what's it called? Is really slow for me. Capture One.
Oh, really?
Like going in and out of the crop tool takes like seconds. It's just like, you just wait there spinning. It's like, you're going to a crop tool. What is taking, you know, what should take long? Just give me a box. Let me grab the corner of it. Like what, but you know, everything's got a new thing. While we're in the crazy announcement stuff here, what do you think about this? Apparently, the new iPhone camera's pretty great. The Pixel 2 camera's pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Galaxy the new 8. iPhone camera's great. iPhone cameras have been great for several generations now. My big thing with the 10 is just don't drop it.
Right. Yeah. Man, somebody dropped it from iFixit or somebody dropped it from 3 feet.
Yeah.
And it just, the whole back shattered.
Yeah.
And the
already front reports and, of fronts and backs shattering. And yeah. Okay, good luck. Yeah, I have no interest in.
Yeah. Until that design becomes the like sort of standard iPhone design.
Right.
You know, maybe the next year. Well, and
if you're spending, look, if you're in it for the camera, if that's all you're in it for, it's like, oh man, I got to have that camera.
Right.
I would imagine. And I'm not a chip designer or a sensor designer, but I would imagine that for $1,100, you can buy a better camera than what you will get in the iPhone.
Sure, you could get like one of those little Sony things that everyone loves.
So, I don't know. I have no desire to upgrade. I have no desire.
What do you use now currently?
6S, 64 gigabyte 6S.
Me too.
Okay, and you know what? Not one person... although maybe it'll start after this, but not one person has ever looked at one of my iPhone photos and gone, wow, you know, if you only had that 1.8 lens.
Yeah, sure.
This would be something special.
I think the software and the chip is getting better overall, you know, so and the lenses are a little bit better. You know, I find my lens getting dirty and I got to like clean it off before I could take a nice clear photo or else I get.
And you know what? Give me the option to remap the default camera to something else. Why is that such a big deal?
Thing. Well, they don't let you remap the default anything to anything else in the iPhone.
Anyway.
You know, yeah, because I use the Gmail, not the Gmail app. I use Inbox by Google.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like trying to get it to open. That's why I use Chrome, so I can click on things and actually have them open and mail things into Inbox instead of this. Yeah, it's a pain in the neck.
Anyway. So what are you going to do? Yeah, top performers. What are you going to do?
You know, I've had this phone for, I guess, what, 2.5 years now, two years.
Your success as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little over 2 years. And I guess almost exactly 2 years. And I was thinking about it last night and I thought to myself, if you told me there was no new iPhone for the last 2 years and this was still the state of the art,
mm-hmm.
I would have no problems with it.
No, no problem.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, only that there is the new one that I have any sort of,
yeah.
not even angst, like certainly nothing like I had when I was younger.
Yeah. Don't give me a new, I don't need a new piece of hardware. I need an OS that doesn't lock up multiple times a day.
Oh, yeah. Very buggy.
Yeah.
11.
Yeah.
Speaking of software, Jeffrey.
On the other hand. Right.
All right. Okay. So you have the original X Pro One,
famously
built in 1973.
Built in 1973, out of cast iron, because they had not yet discovered magnesium steel or aluminum. Yeah. No. So okay, weird thing, and I called you about this during the week. I love the X Pro One. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. I love using it. I love the usability of it.
Except when you don't.
No, I do. What I don't love about it is the hit and miss of the autofocus. Okay. Now, part of it is because I'm using the 35-1.4, which is a big piece of glass, and it's the first generation of the Fujifilm lenses for this camera, and it only uses one focus motor instead of multiple focus motors, which the later generations use, and they're smaller and lighter and all that. So when it locks, it's tack sharp. It's a beautiful piece of glass, but it is often slow to focus. Right. So I was looking I don't know if you know this.
That's your new band name.
What?
Slow to focus.
Slow to focus. I don't know if you know this, Bill, but I've been looking into new cameras.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic. Yeah.
So I was looking at trade-in values and all this, and I thought, you know, I wonder something, and I wonder if my firmware is current. And so I looked up Fuji firmware, and there was a version, I was using version 3.6.1, and there was a 3.7 firmware. Okay.
Okay.
But the firmware did not mention at all the focus, either speed or accuracy. Okay.
Okay.
So 3.7 was according to the notes anyway, all it really fixed is the parallax of the not parallax. Yeah, I guess it is parallax. Showing in the viewfinder, right?
Right, right, right.
But nothing to what I'm having issue with. But I thought, you know what? I'll upgrade just so it's current, right? Let's see, specification when the corrected AF frame is on in the shooting mode has been changed. The corrected AF frame in the OVF is fixed on the recommended value described in the owner's manual. Man, who writes these things? Anyway, so nothing about this. Also upgraded the lens firmware. What I found was that, and unless I'm just, you know, wishful thinking, but I don't think I am, both speed and accuracy seem to be improved by going to this latest firmware, even though there was nothing listed in the release notes that it would address. I spent some time walking around the house, and I shot maybe 30 or so pictures just walking around the house, interior, exterior. And the only two that were not in focus were shots of the turntable, which is kind of in a corner. And I looked at the EXIF data, and the shutter speed in both cases was below a tenth of a second. So okay, not surprising that those would be not sharp, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
all of the other photographs were sharp, and I'm scratching my head going, what's going on? And then it got me thinking about firmware. Could something in the previous firmware have disabled or, you know, otherwise made wonky something from the previous firmware to that, and then this firmware somehow replaced that to its default setting where it should have been, instead of, you know where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I called Bill, And I said, have you ever heard of any of this kind of thing?
And I said, I actually worked on the Fuji firmware, right. And I can tell you.
That's right. So Wadman-san it just got me thinking about firmware. And we had kind of an interesting discussion about what the features and functionality of these cameras, because they are sort of mini computers now, that get enabled or disabled seemingly willy-nilly by manufacturers. And you brought up the Magic Lantern issue. Sure. And remind people, for those of you who don't know, what that is.
So there's a few years ago, this group of people, I think they actually started with an original Canon firmware and then started hacking at it and adding all kinds of new features that the standard Canon firmware didn't have. For example, audio gain adjustments, analog and digital gain adjustments, live audio monitoring through headphones, a toggleable wind filter, test tones, recording audio in wave. You could get custom Kelvin white balances in different modes.
And in some cases, these are features that Canon insisted weren't possible. Is that right?
Yeah. Auto exposed to the right. You know what I'm saying? Like things that you shouldn't be able to do. Full control over the H.264 bitrate, recording HDR video, recording 14-bit uncompressed raw video to a CF or SD card on a Mark III, on a 5D Mark III. You know, stuff that they would never let you do with the standard Canon stuff. And they would say, oh, well, you know, the sensor can overheat and we have physical constraints and whatever it is. And yeah, maybe this is burning your sensor really hot and it's not going to last as long. And they have data that shows that whatever, or maybe they just didn't want to cannibalize their other cameras, you know, their more expensive cameras, which is perfectly, you know, understandable, but it just goes to show you like how many things are not limited by the hardware, but are just really a matter of software features and coding and that kind of stuff. I even pointed out just for my camera, for example, one of the things you can do in a lot of Nikon cameras is mask off parts of the viewfinder, or certainly in live view, mask off part of the screen. So just show me a square crop or a 4x5 crop on a 2x3 camera or that kind of thing.
Right.
So that you could do composition better. This is not a difficult thing to do, especially on a live view. Just gray out the sides. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not a feature on my Pentax. And it's just like, you think of all the things that they did do on this camera that are very excellent for photographers, that like make a lot of sense and are logical and designed for a photographer. You think that a bunch of people would sit around a table and go, what cool features would photographers kill for on a camera that we can do easily with a day or two of coding?
Yeah, that we're charging $8,000 for.
Right. Let's make a list. Like what can we give them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's fascinating to me what can and can't be added. And I think Fuji is a terrific example of that, because they do support their cameras after the fact, and they do add, I mean, the latest X-T2 firmware added like 30 something features, not fixes, actual features, you know?
Well, therein lies the question though of, well, first of all, the X-T2 is the current camera, right?
You know, and the X-Pro 2, one of the Fuji guys, Billy, basically said that the X-Pro 2 is going to get 4K in an upcoming firmware update.
Yeah.
So they're going to provide an entirely new shooting mode in firmware that in theory could or should have been there on release.
Oh man, there's a new Olympus firmware that does all this crazy new stuff. Did you see there was
For the EM1?
Is that the top of the line one?
Yeah, that's their
flagship. I can never remember.
EM1 2.
Yeah, so significant firmware updates. Yeah, like crazy video firmware updates that let you shoot in high frame rates at 4K and change the bit rate of the video to all these higher things, like all this kind of stuff. And I get that, man. Like, I think it's really cool that they're adding this kind of stuff. But, you know, companies like Olympus have to do these things because they're sort of like the low dogs on the totem pole, right? They can take the chances that the big guys are not going to take most of the time. Mm-hmm. I also wonder, even with the Fuji, all of those maybe were features that were designed in Jeffrey, and the hardware was ready before the software was ready. So let's put it out with a limited amount of features. We'll put out more features later, and we'll look like heroes, like we're adding features that were supposed to be there in the beginning.
There's this internal roadmap that we've always had with regard to this camera.
Exactly. A half of a PR thing. Like they almost sell it initially slightly crippled so they can look like heroes by fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's true, but I wouldn't be surprised, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
I think it would be great if camera firmwares were built on some sort of common platform, or that they'd allow people to modify these things more, like an active hacking, camera hacking community would be amazing.
Like the Hackintosh community.
Or even just like, I want a magic lantern for my camera that'll allow me to do, other things. My camera is not nearly common enough that anybody would ever actually make a weird hacked firmware for it.
Right.
But,
it's kind of fascinating though. I mean, I've been thinking about this ever since. And again, I don't have any, empirical evidence or test data to show that it's fixed, for lack of a better word, but I'll tell you, just in the little bit of testing, my hit rate has been dramatically different.
Yeah. Does that feel weird?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
You're like, I can actually take pictures now. It's very odd.
Yeah. I love the image quality. I love the feel of shooting with it. It just, I get frustrated by coming home and being excited about what I had shot. And only to look at it on the computer and go, soft, 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 soft.
Maybe you're getting better at focusing. Maybe the camera has nothing to do with it.
Maybe you finally just stop swinging it around your head.
Maybe you stop shaking. Is the new medication working for you?
Right, I guess. My empathetic friend and co-host, Bill Wadman.
Well, tell it like it is.
Right.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors.
Okay. What? I don't know. I was going to try and think of something witty, but I have nothing.
Today's show is sponsored by our great friends at Squarespace. Build your next website with Squarespace. Their platform is fantastic. Fantabulous. Fantubular.
Tubular. For those of you watching Stranger Things 2.
Totally tubular. Totally man.
Tubular. coming from California, I find that a little offensive.
The redheaded girl's good.
Oh, she's great. The Max? Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's a good character.
If the Stranger Things kids were building a website, they would totally use Squarespace.
Oh my God, you kidding me? They don't know anything other than Squarespace.
Who would build it? If the Stranger Things kids were building a website, who would be building it?
You mean who in their crew would be building it?
Yeah, who in the crew would be responsible for the website?
Definitely Dustin.
You think?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Okay. Why you think differently?
I don't know. I think Mike would be. I think he would angst over it too much. I think Mike's the WordPress guy because he wants to tinker with things, right?
Dustin's just like, we got to get this done. This just has Dustin's to look like, good.
We got let's just go. Let's just get this thing up and we got to go.
you could use your fantastic Squarespace website to turn your cool ideas into money for you. You gotta, Jeffrey, do you make money on your website?
I don't make money on anything.
You can showcase your work. You can blog or publish content. You can sell products and services of all kind. You can promote your physical or online business. You can announce upcoming events or special projects and more. Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, beautiful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell just about anything online. The ability to customize look and feel, settings, products with just a few clicks. Like even your friend who's not even that much of a computer nerd can do this. This is easy. It makes sense. If you can use Facebook, you can make Squarespace websites. Everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. So it looks great on your phone or your tablet or your Google Glass. Can you see stuff?
Is that still a thing? They still make that?
It should be. A new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions. You can buy your domains at Squarespace too, which is great. You have everything in one place. Analytics that help you grow in real time and show you what's working, what's not, what's popular, what's not. Built-in search engine optimization. So the Google and Bing and are there any other search engines anymore?
AltaVista, sure.
AltaVista.
Lycos.
can find you. Wait. There's another one that I liked.
So,
what was the other one?
Fire up NCSA Mosaic and get to surfing.
Yeah. You get free secure hosting that makes sure that everything just works for you, right? They're patching it. You don't have to patch or upgrade anything. They're constantly patching and upgrading in the background. And they send you these little blog alerts that let you know like new features and when new templates come up and stuff. Plus, they got a 24/7 award-winning customer support. We are encouraging folks to make it with Squarespace. You can easily create your website all by yourself. Stand out with a beautiful website from Squarespace. Keep dreaming, but make it a reality, Jeffrey, with a website from Squarespace. Go check out squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code OTP to receive 10% off your first purchase of a domain or a website. Thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and our wonderful show of On Taking Pictures.
On Taking Pictures. Yeah. So the short answer to that, all that is there's not as much pressure to look for another camera. Although I still, man.
Oh, I thought we were done with that. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's all right. X Pro 2 still looking good.
I think your camera is fine until it can't do what you need it to do.
I will definitely take it on vacation, though. If somebody wants to send me an X100F to just pocket around Paris, I wouldn't say no.
That's what I used. Wasn't bad.
You used a T. Bad.
Oh, I used a T, right.
Yeah. Still good. But T's fine. Like something to fit in the pocket with an ND filter. You know, if somebody's just got an X100F lying around that you go, I've got
two. You want one of mine?
Yeah, well, I'd love one of yours.
You could take both of them. You could shoot stereo. Just stick them right in front of your eyes.
With both of them on a gimbal.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. I did use one of those little Alo clip lenses on my 6S a few years ago, actually for my honeymoon.
Right.
And it was fine. I mean, not great, but all of those, you know, it's
like
funny.
The Alo clip, the moment lenses are supposed to be really fantastic. I've never used the moment ones, but they're supposed to be great.
I have a print on my wall that is, 8x10.
Right.
That I shot on the iPhone 6S with an Alo clip lens in Paris. And I couldn't blow it up to the size of a wall or whatever it is, but it's like the weird storefront that's sitting there. It's great.
Right.
So, you know, could also just do that. Go lo-fi, just carry your phone. Just make sure you bring an extra battery or something.
I've got my external charger thing. Yep.
Those things are great. I bought one, a new Anker one, 13,000.
Yeah. Anker is the brand of I don't know what the milliamp hours is.
Yeah, whatever the new one is, 13,000 with two ports on it. So
nice. If it'll charge your phone like 6 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. In fact, I haven't charged it yet. It just sits in my bag and I've used it like twice, you know. So theoretically there's still 4 charges still left on there.
Remind me, speaking of bags, remind me when we finish. To just remind me, bags.
Like after show or
after show. Yeah, after show. Just
oh boy.
Yeah. I don't want to share it just yet, but I want to run it by you.
If you use a makeup, Jeffrey, the bags under your eyes can be reduced substantially.
See, that's what I've tried cucumbers, but it's not working. I still look tired.
The cucumbers don't work. You have to. The cops are coming for me. Can you hear that?
That's right. Your bad humor is a
I gotta go, guys. I don't know where I was looking that I bumped into Sturgeon's Law the other day.
I don't know. It sounds fishy. For those of you listening, sturgeon is a type of fish. So it was a play on fishy.
Explaining jokes is never funny, Jeffrey. comes from Theodore Sturgeon, a science fiction author and critic who said 90% of everything is crap. Or at least it's put to him that way. It's a little more complicated the way
he
said
it. Okay. 90% of everything is crap. 90% of
science fiction writing. 90% of photography. Was really 90%
tying it
is
to
architecture.
Sort of literary world or everything. Everything created.
I think ultimately the phrase is derived from Sturgeon's observation that while science fiction is often derided for its low quality by critics, it could be noted that the majority of examples of works in other fields could equally be seen as of low quality, that science fiction was thus no different in that regard to other art forms.
Hmm.
Basically, he was just saying 90% of everything is crap. Which, you know, you and I were talking yesterday about, or last week, yesterday, about it people going to museums in a certain way, right? And, right. You know, we go see all this work, and because it's on the wall, suddenly it's supposed to be important, even though it may or may not, you know, tune to us
right.
at all,
right?
And that kind of stuff, or the amount of noise, visual noise that is on social media and on Instagram and whatever it is.
Sure,
you know, we have these cameras that could do all these amazing things, but do we actually have better pictures now than we've ever had? And I don't know that we do. So, I just thought it was kind of interesting. And you put it, did you put this other link in here?
Yeah.
You?
Well, cause I started thinking about this when I saw this, and I was looking things up just as points of reference. And I came across this video, on YouTube that is, a talk with, a guy named Richard Walter, who is a professor at UCLA. And he's basically saying the same kind of thing, that a lot of stuff that's being produced is crap, but we're so inundated with it that we don't realize that it's crap until further on in the future, when that crap falls away and the good stuff remains. The sort of, so, you know, artistic cream rises to the top kind of thing.
So his argument is that we can only know what is good in hindsight?
Kind of. Or by museums, because this is the other sort of paradoxical thing that he said was, and I wrote it here in the show notes. He says at one point, he's talking about going to the Met, right? Which is his favorite museum, as it is,
sure,
I'm sure, many people's. And he says, quote, "I didn't see a single painting there that wasn't timeless and eternal, that didn't deserve to be there," end quote.
Right. And there are thousands of paintings on the wall.
That's a big statement for me, because I've been to the Met, not for a long time.
Maybe he's just brainwashed into thinking he's right. just seen it so many times.
But isn't that kind of at least partially the mentality of museums, is if it's on the wall, it deserves to be here. It is important. Whether or not you understand why or think that it is, we're telling you it is important.
Well, the funny thing is that there's a hierarchy of, we are a museum. What we decide is important is important.
Right.
Of course, there's the politics and all the rest of it. And then there's the idea of, well, we're the Met. So we're not just any museum. This is one of the top five museums in the world.
Sure.
And, you know, you should listen to us. I'm not agreeing with this. I'm stating it as a thing.
There's still something in here, Bill, that gets to, this doesn't jive with museum goers. This attitude of, if it's here, it's important and you should like it, because museum attendance is steadily dropping.
Yeah, but that's just because people are busy with other stuff, right?
I don't know. Is it? Or is it that the work that's there is not engaging? How do you convince a teenager that Rembrandt is important? How do you convince?
Were you convinced as a teenager that Rembrandt was important?
I don't know. You know, I was talking about this with Adrian the other day. My first real memory of going to a museum was, I don't know if you guys had it here on the East Coast, but the big Tutankhamun.
Museums, yeah, we have those.
No, not museums. The big Tutankhamun show that toured in, it must have been in the late 70s.
Yeah, it was. And yeah, it was definitely here somewhere.
I mean, it was huge, right? It was at the LA County Museum of Art, and our school went to see it. And I remember beforehand, before we knew that it was going to be a field trip, I remember asking my mom, because there was a thing on television about it. And I remember asking my mom, can we please go see this? I really want to see this. And
Treasures of Tutankhamun tour ran from 1972 to 1979.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. So it was somewhere in, I don't remember what year it was when it was in California, but that's really my first memory of going to a museum and seeing art. And I didn't.
And in that case, I as much as I love the Egyptian stuff and the Tutankhamun tomb stuff is amazing.
Yeah.
It's almost spectacle above art.
Absolutely. And is it art? This might be a discussion for another show, but the difference between art and artifact.
Sure. Okay.
You know, the tomb and the burial mask were made of gold and inlaid with lapis lazuli and all, you know,
artisans
all these,
definitely made these things.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. But were they just objects of beauty, or did they serve some other purpose that somehow separates them, you know, art, object, artifact? That I didn't understand the separation, and I didn't understand the crossover. I just knew for whatever reason, I don't even remember it now, but I knew for whatever reason I had to see this thing. I really wanted to see it.
Right. And how did you feel about it when you saw it?
Oh, it was overwhelming.
Right.
It was overwhelming. Because a couple of things. I remember, you know, being, it was almost like going into a church. You know, going into the museum, because I, you know, you were told,
you were okay, entering not, the tomb itself,
you can't touch anything, you know, and, sure. And, you know, it was lit in a very certain way. It wasn't bright. It just felt different. It felt special somehow, you know, like these are maybe that's it. You had the feeling walking through that these things were important just by the way that they were presented in the environment that they were presented in.
Right. But you were also a kid who was predisposed to the arts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember coming home from the exhibit and drawing, you know, King Tut pictures for the next 2 weeks or whatever it was.
Sure, exactly. And I feel like there are kids out there nowadays who are also the kind of kids who will go to the free night at MoMA because they don't have $28 to go on a normal day.
Sure.
And so, yeah,
do they
frown
on you if you don't pay the $28? If you just say, hey, look.
At MoMA, you can't. That's
you can't. Oh, you can't get in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's not a suggested donation.
It's suggested, and you could say, here's a dollar, or you could say, I want to go for free, and I think they'll give it to you.
Yeah, but MoMA, you can't get in.
MoMA's a private museum.
What about the Whitney? Same kind of
thing? The Whitney's also closed, yeah, and it's expensive. It's like $28 too.
Wow.
I think MoMA's more worth the money than the Whitney is personally, but just based upon their general collection, it's more of my liking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, you know, I don't know, man. Like it's, I didn't see a single painting there that wasn't timeless and eternal that didn't deserve to be there.
That's a big statement, right?
That also sounds like a priest of the church that he's a member of. You know
what
I'm saying?
Sure.
I mean, this guy's a professor at a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the people. I think the cost of these things is an issue. I think the fact that there are so many other things that people could be doing, like staring at their phone and clicking likes,
right,
is an element of it. I mean, it's the same problem that TV is having, right? I mean, you know, no television show on today, even the Big Bang Theory and NCIS don't get a quarter of the numbers that Cheers and MASH got.
Yeah, or All in the Family. Yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah, sure, so, I mean, there's a cultural split that's happened. I was listening to this podcast. God, was it yesterday? I guess it was yesterday. Merlin Mann on the Back to Work program on this network was talking about this music podcast that he's been listening to lately called Slate Hit Parade.
I don't know that one.
So it's this guy whose name I can never remember, who's a music historian and critic and blah, blah, blah. And he makes these hour long around shows about different music history kind of things. And he goes real deep into them. For example, I listened to a whole episode about Tom Petty and Prince and how their careers aligned with each other and when they crisscrossed and like how they were very similar, but on other sides of the fence and that kind of stuff. And I learned all this like really interesting stuff in there. For example, like the fact that Prince, in his initial contract, he had all kinds of crazy artistic rights that first time singer songwriters do never get, you know, cause he was so badass and whatever. So they gave him all this stuff. And one of the things in his contract was that it stipulated that he was going to be in the label's pop roster, not their R&B roster. That, you know what I mean? Like these kinds of like interesting things. Anyway, in one of the other episodes, it's all about George Michael and Elton John and how they kind of weaved in and out of each other as two men who were like closeted gay men who sang, who had huge hits, who then kind of disappeared and came back, you know. And one of the things they say is how Elton John in 1975 put out four albums and three of them premiered at number one. That doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't happen. And so, you know, four albums in 1 year, and like all of them become number one.
Wait, what were the four records that he put out?
It's got
to be. Let's see. Remember. Let's see. Discography. Because I'm a big fan of. Okay, so.
It was Yellow Brick Road and.
Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, Rock of the Westies.
Maybe it was those three.
He did two greatest hits, 74 and 77.
Anyway, apparently like nothing about them, like there were, you know, huge hits on all of them. Everyone was these huge giant records. You know what I mean? Like he was just like this monster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that sort of cultural stuff doesn't happen as much anymore, but it doesn't mean that, you know, in the same way that you said, why is Rembrandt important? Well, it's not like Rembrandt's that much older than he was than 40 years ago when you and I thought he was important.
Right.
You know? So will the generation of millennials that everyone talks about as being so out of touch with history and blah, 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 and whatever the generation Z and whatever, will they, as they get older, kind of come around and go, oh yeah, there's a lot of stuff before we got here. That's pretty cool.
Right. Right. I think it comes down in part to presentation and finding a way.
Bieber and Kanye were there.
No, finding a way to make it feel relevant.
Right.
Rather than just giving the provenance of it and the historical nature of why it's important, somehow tie that back in with younger viewers.
Yeah, but are people as, I wonder if there's this, if our obsession with history and what came before is a Victorian notion that is getting outmoded.
Maybe. Maybe.
I heard Tutankhamun changed his name to Love Brother one time.
That's right. Brother Love Tut. In a desperate bid to stay relevant, Tutankhamun has...
Right?
This just in. Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, we'll put some links to the show notes if anybody has some thoughts on that. I don't know where we're going on that one, but I think that there's something there.
Yeah.
And we'll have to think about it. Let's talk about our second sponsor today. It's Storyblocks.
I got a thing. Okay. Since the last show, I've been wandering around in Storyblocks, okay? And you get a trial, right? You can sign up for a trial, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I have this idea of trying to make a little, I don't know, maybe it's a video, maybe it's some sort of thing, but entirely out of assets from Storyblocks.
Okay, cool.
Because there's literally everything you need to make something. You know, you can make, there are video clips that you can string together, images to composite together into something else, and then, you know, music and sound effects over the top. So I thought it might be fun. I don't know. We have to think about this, but is there a way that maybe we could have like a Storyblocks challenge of some sort? Like,
where, oh, I see.
You know, we invite listeners to sign up for the trial and make something, and then maybe we can, I don't know, maybe we can get Storyblocks to you know, pony up a membership or something. I don't know.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, let's see what we can do.
You know, maybe we can talk to them and say,
it is crazy, the idea of like, okay, here's your little Lego Storyblocks, as it were. You know what I mean? And like put them together into making something without any new content.
Yeah. Make something in here just with this that tells some little, you know, 60-second story or something, and maybe Storyblocks would be up for doing a little contest and then offering like a subscription for the winner or something. I don't know.
You're just an idea guy. They got to run with it, right?
Right.
You can get high quality stock images, videos, and audio for a fraction of the cost with Storyblocks, Jeffrey. Download all the stock to your heart's desires from their members library, including 400,000 images, 150,000 videos, and 100,000 audio clips. Apparently, they have access to Alan Bailward's hard drives. All content is royalty free, so you can use it for commercial. All content is royalty free, so you can use it for commercial and personal projects. New content is added regularly, so there's always something fresh to download. You know, it is funny though. It's like there's so many situations where you just need that. I just need that one clip of the Statue of Liberty to make sure people realize that my story's in New York, you know, right, even though I shot it in Vancouver, you know, like like every show on television nowadays.
Right.
Although they do film a lot of stuff in New York nowadays.
Okay, you can even flip this around.
Yep.
You can put your content on Storyblocks, and if it sells, you start making money.
Yeah, that was true.
So if you're, you know, if you're this like ridiculously prolific shooter, or you just have, you know, maybe you went to the Galapagos or something on vacation and you shot some terrific 4K that most people aren't going to get. Throw it up.
Yeah, you go to Indonesia, you got some Komodo dragons on the video. People need Komodo dragon video.
Yeah.
You ever see those things? They freak you out?
They scare me. I don't want to be in a place where a lizard can chase me down.
Yeah, alligators can run at like 40 miles an hour for short distances. Nope. You know that?
Yeah.
Alligator can like catch you.
Yeah, no. Uh-uh.
And then just keep turning you over.
Okay, enough. You're freaking me out. I'm looking around the house now.
Go to storyblocks.com/ontakingpictures to get all the stock images, video, and audio you can imagine for just $149. That's Storyblocks, storyblocks.com/ontakingpictures to download anything from thousands of images, videos, and tracks and unlock discounts to millions more. Go check it out. Thank you very much for their support of On Taking Pictures and 5x5.
Yeah, we'll have to reach out to them. So stay tuned. We'll find out if maybe we can do something like this, because I think this would be super fun.
Yeah, no. This is pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, who's Jerry Lake and why should I care?
Okay, this is kind of cool. All right, bear with me, gang.
Rawr.
What?
I was bearing with you.
Yeah. So we're Fielding and I are driving down the street, and there's a guy raking leaves, because there are a ton of leaves on our street. And I said hello and how you doing, like I normally do. I talk to a lot of the neighbors, and he informs me that he's just bought the house. There was a house for sale down the street, and he was just over here helping this person with their yard. So nice guy.
Okay.
And we just got to talking for a few minutes, and you know, his mom was formerly at the Smithsonian, and his dad, did some photography work with GW and the Corcoran, just very casual, matter-of-factly kind of conversation. And so Fielding looks up his dad, Jerry Lake, and finds this article. And this kind of blew me away. So I just wanted to share a little bit of you, of this with you. So Professor Jerry Lake, he was a professor of photography at GW, right?
Okay.
So Professor Jerry Lake once disassembled a log cabin in Pennsylvania to remove a 5-foot-tall coal-fired furnace. He brought it back to Virginia, where it now heats his house, the one he built himself. A few years ago, Lake drove all the way to Minnesota to buy an enlarger that uses 8x10 photographic negatives. Quote, it barely fit into the pickup and it weighed 1,200 pounds, so the pickup is driving S-curves all the way back, Lake remembers. Lake built his house with a 14-foot ceiling in the second floor darkroom so that the enlarger would fit properly. What he didn't take into account, however, was getting the machine into the house. He and some friends had to take a chainsaw to the railing on the porch before they could get it inside. In addition to the beautiful house that has taken about 15 years to complete, Lake has also embellished his environmentally friendly farm with a greenhouse, two lakes stocked with numerous types of fish. He and his wife, Tony, grow spinach, corn, collards, and 6 different types of hybrid tomatoes in his garden. He also created orchards, hay fields, pastures, with a dozen beef cattle. He tells people once he traded one of his cows for 63 pieces of safety glass. while finishing the house, Lake lived in a tent and then moved into a trailer. It took him 10 years to make the house livable. In an attempt to justify the lengthy building time, Lake says he was imitating Frank Lloyd Wright, quote, getting to know the land before I built my house, end quote. To pay for the property, Lake worked 2 jobs. He taught photography at both the Corcoran School of Art and GW. And this article, it goes on a little bit about you know, his life and a little bit of background. And I just thought it was so fascinating that you never know who's just down the street or around the corner. And
totally,
you know, we embark on this little journey of reading about this person's life and unfold this amazing story, you know? So I'm excited to get to know his son a little bit and, you know, find out some stories about what's going on and, you know, this, what sounds like anyway on paper, a really insightful and interesting life.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, that gets back to your whole thing of, you know, somebody realizing you were here kind of thing.
Yes.
Which is a topic that, which is a thought process that I brought up years ago. Mm-hmm. This idea of like, I want to make stuff that at least shows that I existed, you know, yeah. that people yeah. will look back on and say, oh yeah, that one picture of that one woman that time was really great, you know?
Yep.
And then you have somebody like this where the process is as much about the work. It's funny, interesting that almost all the stories about this guy are about the process of the things he's doing. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right, 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 right. Very little about the eventual outcome.
Yeah, right. To the point where I'm like, wait, I want to see the pictures that he made with this enlarger or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So, there's one thing he says down here. Students should understand the photographic process. No matter what happens concerning technology, you will never be shut out if you understand the process, Lake lectures.
Isn't that
if
great?
If you know how to, you can take any idea and reach it. Technique and knowledge is the photographer's palette. If you can't control the palette, you won't be a great artist. Do you think that technology and knowledge is still the photographer's palette, Jeffrey?
Yeah, although I think it's shifted a bit. You know,
as computers replace silver color prints as a means of communication, these prints will be more highly valued, he predicts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Jerry Lee Lake was his name, professor of photography at George Washington University. But there is that thing that you just mentioned about process. I was listening to a podcast over the weekend talking to
this guy's right up your alley, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Talking to Jason Lee, who actor from, you know, lots of Kevin Smith movies and right. My Name is Earl,
yep.
Pro skateboarder, but also huge advocate of film photography, not photography, film photography. And he makes that very clear in this interview that for him, photography has to be film based, that it has to exist in an analog capture medium.
Explain why.
Nothing. Yes, but nothing that would
convince somebody otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, interestingly, he prints digitally. Okay, but the capture process, the part of it is the archival nature of, you know, he knows that he can go in and grab this box of negatives and not have to worry about, in his words, a hard drive, you know, crashing or failing. You've got to worry about, you know, temperature, heat, humidity, you know, all that kind of stuff with negatives. But I found it interesting that he has such a sharp line in the sand drawn about the technology that is photography. Doesn't Right. own a digital camera, doesn't have any interest in a digital camera, has many film cameras because for him, that is photography.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's hard to reconcile circa 2017, approaching 2018, where we're seeing more and more the demise of even an optical viewfinder on a digital camera. Like everything is going to be electronic. Soon you will not experience the world through a camera other than it being interpreted by a sensor, by an EVF. There will be no direct link between you and the world you're photographing anymore.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's I spent the last week, last Wednesday, I took a train up to Tarrytown.
Mm-hmm.
And
this Kent, this is where you went to Kent?
Yeah, yeah. And went and hung out with a friend of the show, Kent Miller, who is a photographer, friend of mine, excellent photographer, who's lately gotten really into 5x7 film cameras. So he
I love some of the pictures that you sent me, like the vintage packaging and accoutrement that he's got hanging around.
Right. So Kent goes and they don't, I mean, Ilford still makes 5x7 film sheet film.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's in limited supply and this kind of stuff. And Kent has gotten really into buying old expired Kodak film from the 40s and 50s.
Right.
So he goes on eBay and he buys these old boxes of film, and he likes the fact that they are a mess. And say, you know, he was saying that the apparently the rule of thumb is that it loses about a stop of sensitivity per decade.
Per decade, yeah, sure.
So this stuff is, you know, 40s to 50s to 60s to 70s to 80s to, you know, it's 7-8 stops down from where it theoretically was. And this right. wasn't particularly fast film anyway. So
he's shooting at ASA 8.
ISO 3.
Oh my God. Sit here for 42 seconds and don't right. move.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah. yeah, right, right, right. And so I went up there to take his picture for my series and he to take a picture of me for himself. So we got out his 5x7. We went over to this hill. We put together a Broncolor, big 4x4 foot Broncolor box and a backdrop his friend painted and, you know, set it up on this hill with the Tappan Zee Bridge in the background. And he shot two shots of old Kodak ortho film, which he had not even ever used, which is more sensitive to blues and greens, I do believe.
Mm-hmm,
And then a couple sheets of old Kodak panchromatic film, which is sensitive to everything. And then two sheets of the Ilford. And then he processed each of them, one in traditional chem and then one in, with like a Rotinol or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Rotinol. You know. Yeah.
And then, the other one with the monobath developer,
R5.
Yeah. So, which is the new 55 monobath developer stuff that they sell that we've talked about before,
yep.
which by the way, stinks all to high heaven.
Yes, it does.
Ugh.
Very ammonia-y.
You bought some, right?
Yeah.
Have you processed much in it?
The R3 I have.
Okay. And does it work well?
Works really well. Yeah. You know, it's one of these things where if you go by the directions on their site or on the bottle, there's one way to do it. It's this temperature for this long, agitating this often, and that's it.
Right.
Some of the other developers like Rodinal or even D76 or variations thereof, you've got a little more leeway with temperature and time. Increasing contrast or decreasing contrast, or, you know, you have a little more flexibility than what it seems to be. And maybe correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but it seems to be that with the monobath developers, they really are designed to work within specific parameters.
Yeah, exactly. And interestingly enough, and I'm sending you a picture to your phone if you have your phone there.
Yep, Jeffrey. I got it. Is this his picture of you?
So this is one of his pictures of me using the ortho film. But the interesting thing, if you zoom all the way in and look at the grain, it looks like a bunch of like paramecium all over the top of each other. Do you see this? I don't know if you got the picture.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Wow. Look at that.
Right. So that
yeah,
didn't happen.
It's not grain. It looks like almost like dark rice or something.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now here's the weird thing that I can't quite figure out. And maybe we have a listener who's a giant film nerd who knows this kind of stuff. But I have seen prints when I was a kid. Every once in a while, there was like if I go through like childhood photos of mine at my mother's house or whatever, some of the prints from the 70s had this look on them. And
wow,
I don't know what causes
wild.
It. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it really does look like you've set like another patterned layer to multiply mode over the top of you.
Right. So apparently this is what happened when he used the monobath developer on the ortho film versus the traditional.
It's almost like it's binding multiple individual grains together into longer chains. That's what it looks like. Like these aren't single grains. They're somehow grouped into you know, multiple
right?
strands. Yeah.
And so I find that kind of stuff
weird.
Really interesting. And you know, it's a fun little example of, right? Because
it's
5x7 film ends up being, it's way cheaper than 8x10 film, but it's almost twice the size of a 4x5 sheet. So you get a big enough negative that you could do contact prints that look kind of good,
mm-hmm.
but not so big that it costs $10 a shot because, you know, the 8x10 film is so crazy and expensive. And then, you know, you need,
what are the horizontal scratches here? Are those after the fact?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Good question. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Would you mind sharing this with the group, this picture?
Yeah, I'll let me ask Kent if I can. But yeah, if I can,
yeah,
I'll just,
if he doesn't mind, because it's kind of fascinating. And maybe put a side-by-side or an inset of the 100% so people can see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I could, I mean, yeah. And this, the crazy thing, this is just like a quick, like a not even full res scan, I don't think, of, wow. of what he did. It was all very interesting to me. And, you know, and he had to go buy a canister to develop it in, Jeffrey, from a guy in Japan who hand makes them, because you can't buy 5x7 film tanks. You know, developing wow. tanks.
What's the anymore. 35 at the top left corner? Is that, did he add that in, or is that on the stock?
No, I think that's stock. On the stock.
That's neat.
It's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is this image perfect in the sense that, like, well, no, it's like the, you know, the emulsions coming up, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
But that's, he likes that look. And I understand that, you know what I mean?
Like, but it's film, how it's shooters would fawn over this. This is what makes photography for film shooters. Are these right. imperfections? Are these little right. details that right. we can talk about?
But I still think it's funny that during the age of film, there were so many photographers who were constantly trying to perfect film. Right. They were trying to get rid of these things right, that we right. now look back on as the things we love about it.
What was your shutter speed and aperture on this?
I think he was at F in this shot. I don't remember exactly. Let's say either it was F8 or F11, somewhere around there at half a second.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to,
Plus the strobe, although I don't know that the strobe fired on this.
What's the block that you're using? How many, like what, how big was the strobe?
Oh. Yeah, that's the thing. This strobe was not that high powered, although it was an old Broncolor dual tube head. So the head has two tubes in it that plug into two ports on the pack. So it's actually like you had two heads in
there.
Oh,
wow. You know, okay. They fire, and both heads were firing for this shot?
Yes. Wow. Although it was still at like the lowest power it could be at, like 6 or 7. I will say, though, that the battery life on that Broncolor pack was terrible.
Huh.
I mean, we got maybe 30 pops out of it at medium to low power.
Oh, really? And then it was done.
Yep.
Wow.
It started giving us errors and shutting off and stuff. Now, it could be that the battery's going or whatever it is, but all I got to tell you, man, my little Vagabond Mini and my Einstein can go like 500 pictures and it's still fine. You know,
right.
It's crazy. So anyway, yeah, 5x7 film. If people are into that, man, that's like a whole other ball of wax. Pretty cool stuff.
That's cool.
Pretty cool stuff. Yeah. We should do our last ad and go to the group and see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm in.
Okay. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Learning, now featuring lynda.com content, the leader in online learning for the past 20 years. LinkedIn Learning is for creators, for the curious, for those who want to advance their career. Maybe you want to learn how to shoot raw, work in low light, or sharpen your photo editing skills. Everything you need to achieve that and more is on LinkedIn Learning. Whether you shoot photos for work, for pleasure, or both, LinkedIn Learning can help you take your photography to the next level. Gear courses that'll help you get the most out of your camera, from digital SLR to mirrorless to your smartphone. To help enhance you, what you shoot, there's a complete coverage of Lightroom and Photoshop, including CC 2018. In fact, they're working closely with Adobe to release updated courses the day new versions are released, which is actually really handy because it lets you, you know, see what the new features are and learn how to use them without having to wait 6 months for somebody to come up with a course. LinkedIn Learning has courses for all experience levels, covering a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. I used the LinkedIn last week to go check out. I told you guys about all the new stuff in Lightroom Classic, God, those are so cool. The new modes that allow you to do luminance and color masking.
Right.
Super useful. Like, to the point where, way better than the tools to go painting in or gradients. It's like, yeah, gradient works if all you're trying to do is like lower the sky when there's nothing else going, you know, jutting up into the sky, like mountains or light poles or trees or something like that. But like, if you need to get in there and really work with a good mask, it's almost impossible to do until now.
Right.
So it's pretty cool.
I'm looking forward to something I've been wanting to learn how to do is time lapse, but where you ramp up and ramp back down.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Where you're integrating just like normal motion video and then ramp up to, you know, 400 frames per second or whatever.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
But they're all here.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm looking at them. Well, I'm thinking about when we go on vacation, just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Cool.
the sights and sounds of Paris. I don't know.
With a LinkedIn Learning membership, you can quickly find the right video course for you from their extensive library, learn from industry experts who are passionate about teaching, explore course recommendations curated just for you. You can use project files and quizzes to validate your learning. And also, the courses are structured so you can learn from start to finish or jump back to a specific chapter and watch shorter bite-sized segments, which I generally do. It's like, I don't need a whole thing on Lightroom, but tell me about this one feature that I don't know how to use.
Let me dive into this little snippet.
Yeah, exactly. Just tell me about the color stuff, and that's what I need. Learn at your own pace using the method you prefer. You can get transcripts for each video, which you can watch, listen, or read along with. Which is fantastic, because some people are the kind of people who are visual learners. They need to read. They need to see it while somebody's saying it.
Right.
There's no hidden charges or upsells. Access to all the courses you want, all for one monthly price, available worldwide. So anywhere in the world, if you're in Portugal or Libya or Australia right now and you're listening to the show, you can go try out LinkedIn Learning. Learn from anywhere at your on your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. And we've got a special deal for you. You can get a free 30-day trial with LinkedIn Learning today by visiting linkedin.com/OTP. That's linkedin.com/OTP, all lowercase. And we thank them very much for sponsoring the podcast. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you make this podcast possible.
Here I am right here. I'm on the site right here. linkedin.OTP.
OTP.
Good stuff.
You want to go to the group? What do you got? You got something else? I was just thinking of something else I wanted to tell the story about. Now I lost my train of thought.
That's all right.
It's going to drive me crazy.
We'll put it in the next time.
Okay.
I don't think I have anything. I got a new fountain pen. That's about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Is it a good fountain pen?
Don't tease me. You don't care.
I don't care. Not at all. I'm sorry, what? What'd you say?
What?
Yeah, what?
Wait, was pencil, that voice pen? In my head?
Those what? Use ink, right? Insert Jeffrey talking for 30 minutes about ink here.
Well, you know, Bill.
Yes.
I'm glad you asked.
Okay, Jeffrey. Yeah, just keep going.
Yeah.
I'm listening. I'm just going to go make some toast.
So, Chris Wirth, that picture is nuts.
That
rock looks like it could just drop away.
Terrifying.
No.
Definitely not doing this.
For those of you not looking at Chris Worth's picture, it's a cliff on both sides with a boulder that looks like it has fallen between these two cliff faces and is suspended there like wedged in somehow. And there's a dude standing on it. But it looks like that rock could just drop away.
Well, I don't think that the rock's not going to go straight down the middle, but I could see it tumbling sort of towards the camera.
Yes.
And then you'd have to like run on it like a log in a cartoon. Where is that? And
remind me never, ever to go there.
You know, these are the kinds of things that I look at that I go, nope. My feet are getting numb right now just looking at this picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a wuss.
Robert, scary hand from a cemetery in Verano. That's creepy.
Terrifying.
Wait, what's going on here? This looks like a deliverance moment.
Some people are scary
when
they're hungry. That's funny.
Thomas Sorensen. What is this? What am I looking at? Is it just a
scary or just creepy?
It's creepy. It looks like somebody would like flay skin and put it on there to dry.
Ding ding ding.
Right. Right. Hey, boy, you sure are birdie.
Look at Michael Bambuck.
You ever see that movie Deliverance? That's a scary flick.
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
It's a scary movie, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Unintentional.
For me, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Wow, look at Chris's picture of the scary clown. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I like the girl with the scissors in her hair down there. Robert Brown's picture. That's pretty good.
Kenneth Wilson.
These people came up with some pretty good stuff.
Kenneth Wilson got roped. How'd you get roped into doing that, Kenneth?
You know, I have to admit that, or I have to say that a lot of people find clowns really scary. Do you find clowns scary?
I don't know. It depends on the clown.
Oh, there's a lot of good ones. A lot of good scary ones.
Tanya, scary scarecrow.
Yeah. What did you dress up as for Halloween?
I didn't dress up.
Okay. What about Michael's picture of the three women in the weird, like, nylon things, the see-through stuff around the other one? Do you see that one? Sometimes our specters consume us.
Yeah, that's kind of strange and creepy too. You guys did a great job.
They did do a good job on the
creepy. Matt Gore, rural New Zealand churches can be scary. Yeah, that looks like a scary place.
You don't have to qualify that to me.
No, churches I'm not going to. Yeah. Given, especially, you know, given
look
the latest
at Jen
thing
Brimage using
the
Instax wide local festival with the scary clowns.
Have you tried that Instax wide black and white? I've been looking for it and it's out of stock everywhere. I'd love to try it.
So you have to have the fancy Instax wide camera.
Oh, you don't. It doesn't just work with a regular Instax camera. Okay.
I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't know.
Interesting. Okay. With twice the width of the size of the other Instax models, the Instax Wide allows you to capture everyone's expressions clearly. Yes.
So it is a different piece of hardware.
Yeah, I do believe it is. In fact, but you know what? It ends up putting out a camera picture. I always thought that the Mini were too small.
Yeah, they seemed like business card size.
Yes, the Instax Wide 300. I'll put a link in the show.
What do they
notes.
Get for those, for those cameras? What are they running?
Working on it. Imported $95.
Hmm. Interesting. Hmm. Didn't Fuji discontinue 100C, the black and white?
Yeah, but I think maybe only for bigger cameras, like for the 4x5. I think they still make all these Instax films, don't they?
Yeah. Because
they keep selling these cameras, so people love these things.
Right.
The wide ones are 20 exposures for $17. That's not bad.
Yeah, so buck a shot.
Yeah, that
to get back to your question, that the picture in the nylons, it's like the Stygian witches or something. It's very strange.
Yeah. Stephen Godfrey's picture with the girl who's pinhead is actually pretty good. The pinhead girl.
Yeah, that's a great costume.
Well, yeah, look at these. Wait, very good.
Who's the person next? What is that? Spock? Is that zombie Spock? What is that?
What, in that picture?
Yeah. Franken Spock?
Frankenstein, I think. Does he have weird ears?
I think it's just the hair. Just looks like Mr. Spock.
No, I think it's just Frankenstein's monster. See, I qualified that because it's Frankenstein's monster, because Frankenstein is the guy, right? Everyone always yells about that.
Do they yell about it?
Oh, yeah. People get very angry about that stuff.
Huh.
Very, very angry.
All right.
I was thinking today, tiny. What do you
tiny.
Think
tiny. I read that first as tinny, and I went, no, what does that
it's
mean?
It's spelled correct, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. I just wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
To you.
Let's try tiny.
Tiny. What?
Like that? Like that's something new. Sorry. What? What'd you say?
What?
Yeah.
Tiny. Okay. Tiny clock. Tiny hands.
Yep.
Trump.
Tiny Tim. What?
Tiny Tim.
Yep. Tiny Tunes.
Yeah.
Good.
Were you ever an Animaniacs fan? Did you ever watch Animaniacs?
Animaniacs.
Yep.
That right, one?
There you go. Those are the facts.
I was a big fan of Animaniacs.
Yeah, me too.
Not big fan, but I was enough of a fan of Animaniacs that it's a thing. All right. You put in the person that I pushed for photographer of the week. You put this in here.
Yeah.
Did you read the obituary? Is that where you found her?
Yes. Yeah.
Had actually, you known I think about this woman before?
No. Fielding sent this to me.
Okay. Virginia Thorin, who was a fashion photographer mostly in the mid-century, died at 97 years old. Wow, she lived a long time.
Yeah, crazy,
and there's
right?
this bitchin' undated photo of her taking a picture with a big camera out on the street.
Is that great? I love that shot.
Badass.
It's so good. She's got her caber. You know who she looks like? I'm telling you right now. She looks like Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I can see that.
A young Meryl Streep.
Bill Cunningham once wrote to her saying, "You were a camera and an eyewitness to a golden age, the rebirth of Paris after the war."
Yeah.
And if you go and you look at some of these pictures, this woman knew her stuff.
Beautiful.
I mean, it was also of a time and when people were like, fashion was cool then,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Way cooler than it is now.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Like the cuts, the silhouettes.
Yeah.
Mm. That I shot put in, of the woman in the fur coat with that, that giant fur hat. That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, go to the JuneBateman.com fine art page that I linked in there too, because there's a bunch of stuff on there that you can look through.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, that's great.
I mean, obviously, a lot of furs. Apparently, she was into furs or being hired by people who were shooting furs. So,
but I love the tonal quality of them.
Well, you know, that's the thing I was going to bring up. They almost look toned.
Yeah. Desaturate, cool. Yeah. Often on the cool side.
Yeah. 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 Almost blue in a lot of the shots. And yeah, desaturated and blue. It almost looks like, you know, it's like old school filter kind of thing.
Yeah. But was it? Or was it, I mean, could you get this effect shooting tungsten?
I guess you could shoot in tungsten mode. Yeah, you could shoot in tungsten mode.
She could just set her 4x5 digital to tungsten.
No, I'm just saying, I'm thinking how you would do it now. Yeah, yeah. Right. You could, you know, shoot in the wrong mode, essentially. Yeah, shooting tungsten, but use daylight. But it even seems like it's more low contrast papers and maybe a filter during printing, you know, or just a LBA. What is the filter you put on to cool things down? Yeah, you could just, I mean, a filter on the lens, beautiful. As it were.
Really?
Yeah, but very, very cool stuff.
So, this and, stuff on this page that Bill mentioned is from, looks like 1953 to 1967, 69. There are a couple of them on the top row there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I mean, how much the world changed in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Look at the High Priestess of Mink, the Maud Adams 1969 shot up top that is sort of like a. Indian headdress made out of mink that they kind of shot. But then there's like the Ski Bunnies, the 1963 shot, which is way more just sort of straight high fashion than the other stuff is in some ways. Much more modern feeling.
Such good stuff.
Absolutely beautiful work.
Yeah. Like a little bit of Penn, a little bit of Lillian Bassman.
Yep. Yep. And
Is it Bassman or Baseman?
Good question. I don't know. And go look at the Flickr one too, because that one has a bunch of stuff in it too. Some of the same stuff, but
on this June Bateman, second row, left hand side, natural beauty, Susie Parker. Look at that.
Second row, left hand side, natural beauty, Susie Parker. Got it. Oh yeah, look at that. Coolly overexposed and weird like that. And if you go to that Flickr page, you can scroll through some stuff. It's easier to see some of the stuff.
Oh yeah, beautiful stuff.
Look how much of how many of them were for fur ads though. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Go all the way down until you see the one of the girl in the Mercedes, like the, that's on the other page.
With the holding the dog.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, the dog is in the Mercedes. And the one picture to the left, the woman's got like the cigarette in her hand in her pocket with the khaki pants on kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Evelyn Tripp from 1953. Oh, so cool. It's like pictures of your grandparents that look like that, you know?
Yeah. This is great. Yeah. Great stuff.
So yeah, so go.
Please check. Go look at this, Virginia Thorin.
Yep, beautiful, beautiful work. And sorry to see that she passed at the age of 97, but lived a good long life.
Her death was confirmed by her friend and archivist, Betty Guernsey.
Yep.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
I think that's going to do it.
podcast@ontakingpictures.com. You can leave us a voicemail 347-687-9411 at Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris.
Leave us a voicemail. It's free.
I know it is free.
I'll leave us a voicemail. I'll get it started.
Get it started.
Hey Bill. Just want to tell you about my new fountain pen and some ink.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right here. I'm listening. Sorry.
All right, Rip Van Wadman.
I was totally listening.
What else? Oh, Bill tweets at Wadman.
Yep.
Or Bill Wadman. Or Wadman 365.
Yeah, on the Instagram. Do we have an ETA on the print book?
December. Push to December. Okay. I'm changing paper types. I'm going to a little heavier paper. You know what I decided to do is to take some of the guesswork out. I sent them, I asked if they would print before I send the final proof because there were some color shift issues. So I said, would you mind printing basically a color palette? So I know what I'm looking at I know what it's going to look like when you print it. So it's almost like it doesn't matter what it looks like on my screen. I want to adjust to what it wants to print like.
Right. Okay.
And they were like, yeah, sure. So I should get that in the next couple of days because I had some weird shifts in blue and green. The reds were okay, but the blues and the greens in the solid colors shifted. And so, you know, it's almost like when you're designing for, you know, screen printing or something, you can design right. all you want, but there may not be ink in that color. So you may, or designing for Pantone, I guess maybe is a, right. is a closer thing, you know?
Yeah.
So basically I had the original colors and then I did alternates in RGB, CMYK and Pantone for everything. So
they're going to love you.
No, it's just one sheet. All they got to do is print it. They don't have to do anything crazy, do they? Maybe they do. Anyway, but they said they would do it. So I'm very thankful to them. And, you know, I just want it to be right. I mean, look, if I've got no official deadline, then I want to make the book I want to see. So, you know, I'm using a different paper, a better paper, I think.
Right.
And I want to get the colors, you know, as right as I can. It's not going to be perfect, but, you know, I'm really proud of it. And I worked my ass off on it. So I want it to be right.
I think you did a good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
So until then, we'll see you next week.
Yep. Have a great week, everyone. Take some pictures.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many fools, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long. It's clear to me the way you see me here. As this way, say what you wanna say. I know what you will say will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud. Everything we tried to make it right,